Hi, this is Steve Meyer, and I want to thank you for being a regular listener of the ID the Future podcast. We appreciate your interest in intelligent design and the work we're doing to develop the case for the theory of intelligent design. And I'd like to encourage you, if you find these broadcasts edifying, intellectually or otherwise, to become a regular financial supporter of the work of the Center for Science and Culture. You may know that we depend entirely on private donations. We don't get any federal money. We don't get government money for our scientific research program. And if you find the work that we're doing interesting, we'd be awfully grateful if you'd consider becoming a partner in that work by providing whatever you're able to ensure that that work goes forward.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Casey Luskin, Research Director of the Center for Science and Culture. Casey will be discussing why the fossil evidence doesn't support the claim that humans evolved from ape-like precursors. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Mr. Luskin.
Okay, so once we get to the genus Homo, we find something interesting, that they're all very similar to modern humans. And you can actually explain the differences between the various members of Homo with what I would call very small-scale microevolutionary changes. So in contrast to the Australopithecines, the major members of Homo, like Homo erectus and Neanderthals, which is called Homo neanderthalensis, they're very similar to modern humans. In fact, they're so similar that some have classified erectus and Neanderthals as members of our own species, Homo sapiens, that we're all one species. We shouldn't even be calling them different species. Here's a comparison of skulls from Homo erectus A, Neanderthals B, and Homo sapiens C. And these are sort of idealized skulls. Really, I mean, there's a lot of variation. Even within modern humans, the skull size of modern humans can range from normal modern humans, can range from 800 cubic centimeters to 2200 cubic centimeters. That's a huge variation. Now, what's interesting, though, and this will maybe blow your mind, literally, but Neanderthals actually had an average skull size that is slightly larger than that of modern humans. So Neanderthals might have had a bigger skull than you or me. Now, Homo erectus did have a skull size, an average skull size that is smaller than that of modern humans, but it's well within the range of modern human variation. So here's a little table. You can see the gorilla has a skull size of about 240 to 752 cubic centimeters. Chimps, 275 to 500. Australopithecus, sort of similar to the other great apes, 370 to 515. Homo habilis, a little bit bigger than Australopithecus, but still kind of more in the ape range. Homo erectus was 800 to 1250 with an average of 1016. That's well within the range of modern humans, which have 800 to 2200, and again, Neanderthals, 1100 to 1700 with an average of 1450, bigger than the average of modern humans of 1345 cubic centimeters. So if you buy or if you have a copy of our book, Science and Human Origins, this table is in there and you can pore over it and digest it. It's really interesting stuff. I think one of the take-home lessons here, though, is that even modern human beings have such a large range of normal skull sizes that encompasses all the other true members of the genus Homo. And to me, I find that to be very significant. And I think that that shows that really we're looking at microevolutionary change within a species and not macroevolutionary change. So what happens if you do find a skull size that's intermediate? Does that mean that we found the missing link? What does that really tell you? Well, the reality is, again, there's so much variation of skull sizes within species that you find just about a range of everything. I mean, you can find from the smallest skull to the biggest skull, you can find a skull size with almost every single cranial capacity if you want to find it, okay? There's a very wide range of skull sizes that have been found. But what does that mean? I mean, that's the question, right? What does this mean? Well, it turns out that if you want to correlate skull size to intelligence, there's not a good correlation at all. In fact, internal brain organization is much more complex and important for determining intelligence than is the sole dimension of brain size. Brain size is just one single dimension, and it really does not correlate very well with intelligence. So even if we find this nice, neat, lined up row of skulls going from smaller to bigger to bigger to bigger, that does not tell you that we have some compelling evolutionary sequence. If you have a big head, I wouldn't necessarily get a big head over that. Doesn't necessarily mean that you are smarter than somebody with a smaller head. So you can tell that to your brother or sister that has a bigger head than you do. Let's talk about Homo erectus. Was it this bungling, stupid brute? Well, they've actually found, I don't need to go into this in too much detail, but they have found Homo erectus skeletons on isolated islands. Well, that's kind of weird. How did they get there? Well, some have postulated that maybe they actually were seafarers. They built boats. And here's a quote from a paleoanthropologist at North Carolina State University. We all have this idea that early man was not terribly smart. The findings show otherwise. Our ancestors were smart enough to build boats and adventurous enough to want to use them. Boston University archaeologist Curtis Runnels, the idea of finding tools from boat building erectus from this very early time period on Crete was about as unbelievable as finding an iPod in King Tut's tomb. So some of these stereotypes that we have are not necessarily true, that Homo erectus was a bungling, stupid individual. The name Homo erectus actually means upright walking man. And it's so ironic because you'll find textbooks that will have a picture of an Australopithecine put right next to a picture of Homo erectus. These are drawings, of course, right? Interpretive drawings. And the Australopithecine looks like it's just having its first intelligent thought and it's just figured out the meaning of life. And the Homo erectus looks like he just walked out of a bar fight. He's like, ugh. And yet Homo erectus walked upright. It means upright walking man, had a skeleton almost identical to ours, a skull size within the range of modern human variation, and Australopithecines were more like a chimp or an ape of some other kind. So when you see these drawings in textbooks, don't necessarily trust them. Neanderthals as well. We have the stereotype of Neanderthals being these bungling, primitive brutes. Here's a quote from a paleoanthropologist. He says, they may have had heavier brows or broader noses or stockier builds, but behaviorally, socially, and reproductively, they were all just people. Another paleoanthropologist says, Neanderthals were using technology as advanced as that of contemporary anatomically modern humans and were using symbolism in much the same way. We found Neanderthal art. We found evidence that Neanderthals buried their dead. We found evidence of Neanderthal culture. So really, it's hard to distinguish them from some human being that lived in a cave 30,000 years ago. And if you put that person walking down the street today, you wouldn't even be able to tell the difference. So we're not talking about individuals that were necessarily, in my opinion, very much different from you or me. So contrary to popular perceptions and claims by some theistic evolutionists, Neanderthals do not show that humans are descended from some primitive and or ape-like species. In my opinion, I think that you and I might be Neanderthals, we wouldn't know it. Okay, that's my personal opinion. There's also fossil evidence showing morphological mosaics, which is evidence that humans and Neanderthals interbred. And you may have read about this recently in some news stories. They're finding, quote, Neanderthal DNA in modern humans. So what's really the difference between us and them if we have their DNA in us? I think they're best seen as maybe just a subrace of human beings. Just as a little bit of evidence for this, these are actual photos from a reconstruction of a famous Neanderthal specimen, LF1, from France, and also combined with a reconstruction of a Neanderthal skeleton from Israel. And again, this guy could be anybody. You might live next door to this guy, or he might be your brother, okay? In fact, you may have even seen this guy on TV. I think that the comparison here between Neanderthals and Chuck Norris, bow down, is pretty striking here. In fact, if Chuck Norris was Neanderthal, he'd still be smarter, stronger, and more advanced than you. So if you guys enjoy Chuck Norris jokes, I scoured the internet to find any Chuck Norris jokes on evolution. I found a couple here, so here they are. Love them or hate them. There is no theory of evolution, just a list of animals that Chuck Norris allows to live, or Chuck Norris once kicked a horse in the chin. That's how giraffes evolved. So if you like Chuck Norris, then I think, though, this is really striking. I mean, these guys are from France. I pretty much guarantee you they don't watch Chuck Norris, okay? They didn't know that when they were reconstructing this Neanderthal, he was going to look exactly like a television star. So I think we're not talking about primitive, pre-human brutes here. We're talking about maybe a subrace of human beings that really is not much different from you and I. In fact, a paleoanthropologist who studied Homo habilis, she wrote that the differences between these human-like members of the genus Homo can be explained as microevolutionary effects of, quote, size variation, climatic stress, genetic drift, and differential expression of common genes. So we're talking about small-scale microevolutionary changes between the different members of the genus Homo. So just a couple conclusions here. The field of paleoanthropology is based upon sparse data, weak evidence, and much controversy. Hominid fossils fit into two general categories, ape-like species and human-like species with a large, unbridged gap between them. Members of our genus Homo are very human-like, and the evidence does not support the view that humans are descended from ape-like creatures. And I'd like to think Chuck Norris would approve of this. And in fact, I'm going to close with a quote from Chuck Norris. He says, this is from the official Chuck Norris fact book, which I think he wrote. I believe in microevolution, genetic mutations that provide small variations in different species in the animal kingdom, but I don't believe those micromutations lead to macroevolution, large genetic jumps that turn one animal into another, such as apes into humans. So I would say, well said, Chuck, not bad for Neanderthals. So thank you guys very much.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Anne Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.